And welcome to MongoDB TV. I'm your host today, Jesse Hall. We have an amazing guest lined up for you today. Without further ado, we have a couple of special guests from Airwave. And so let me bring them on. We have Vijay and Pankaj. Thank y'all for joining us. How are you? I'll let Pank, if you want to go first, introduce yourself. Who are you and why are you here?
Thank you, Jesse. We're super excited to be here. I'm Pankaj. I'm CEO, founder of Airwave. Airwave is built specifically for technicians out in the field that work on heavy industrial machinery. And you know, some of these advancements in AI have made it possible for us to turn any technician into an expert. And we're doing that with the help of Mongo and their technology. So we're super excited to share that with you guys.
Amazing. And Vijay.
Hey, hello everyone. So this is Vijay and I'm the CTO of Airwave. So I have close to like 20 years of experience on technologies and worked with like six different startups before. And Airwave is my new journey towards the AI world. And I'm very excited actually to build Airwave because this is my first big implementation of AI. And we are going to make a huge impact on the life of service technicians and frontline workers, actually. So we're pretty excited to build or continue with our journey.
Amazing. But I like to keep this very casual, and a question just came to mind. So like AI, like we see AI everywhere these days, right? AI is in every application. And there's a lot of talk out there about, you know, AI is going to take your job, AI this and that, right? So what are your opinions on the AI? Obviously, AI is so helpful, but like, is AI going to, you know, become Skynet? Is AI going to become Skynet?
Yeah, so this is actually something that I get to talk to quite a bit with the folks in our vertical. So we specifically work with the frontline worker space, people that don't have a laptop, don't have a desk, they're out in the field. These are the folks that are up on roofs fixing your HVAC. They're hanging off buildings, washing windows or repairing something. They're in the basement and fixing your generator, making sure, you know, the buildings stay lit. And they're not afraid of AI at all because we're very far from replacing someone that's on their hands and knees underneath a machine trying to figure out why the oil is leaking. But there is tremendous interest in what AI can bring to the table in terms of helping these folks do their jobs better. You know, a lot of times these guys go out and will see a machine that they haven't worked on in 5 or 7 years or maybe even ever. And knowing how it works, knowing how like the circuitry works, it's just, it can't be expected of them. And so if they can quickly and easily come up to speed on it or get the information that they need in order to diagnose and fix a problem, then it's a net win for them and it's a net win for the company.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I can add a couple of points to Punk's, right? So basically like this is from a technical side. So whenever we onboard a customer, right? So we at least get like 1,000 to 5,000 documents to process. And we look into the documents and we see ton of information that it is obviously impossible to actually like ask questions about, or without the power of AI, it is almost impossible that you can able to like go through the documents. And with this support of AI, I think it's making the life easier. So I would say like, I think it is actually enhancing the life of service technicians and the people who are working on the engineering side, because without this, their life would have been a little bit harder because they have to like go and refer to like, you know, different manuals and everything like written on paper. So yeah, it is fascinating now than before.
Yeah. I always tell everyone that AI is just a tool. It's like going from a screwdriver to a power drill. Like it's just going to help everyone, especially in the developer community. You know, a lot of people are saying AI is going to take a developer job because an AI can write the code and do all these things. Yes, AI can start writing code, but you still have to understand the code. You still have to, you know, verify, make sure you still have to have that understanding. It's just going to help you build faster. So it's really amazing. Yeah. It really is amazing.
This episode is part of a live broadcast that is available on our YouTube channel. If you notice any cuts, it is because we had a screen share. For the full version, check out our YouTube channel for this and many other content.
So let's talk about your journey to creating this platform. How did it start? Where did you come? Start with like coming up with the idea, and then like how you went about like building up a PLC for it.
Yeah, so I'll give some context, and Vijay, you can share how you actually implemented it. So Vijay and I have known each other for a long time. This is, I think, our second company, but maybe our third product that we've built together. So the use case came from actually one of our early customers. So I was previously at Zoom, and I had worked at Salesforce, and I came to this conclusion that folks on the front line are underserved in terms of the technology that's available to them. And so we built a asynchronous communication app for them, the ability for them to communicate with one another asynchronously via audio messages. And we got early traction with some customers. And the use case was there was a gentleman who was retiring, who had been in the business for 40 years, knew everything. And they wanted to make sure that they had access to him for the junior technicians that were joining. Like if they had a question, they wanted to be able to ask this guy. Mm-hmm. And so they were using Airwave as sort of this walkie-talkie communication tool to be able to sort of transfer knowledge. And the reason they wanted it asynchronous was because Don didn't want to be on the phone all the time. He didn't want to wear a headset. He didn't want to be holding to that. He wanted to get a question and answer it when he had time to answer it. So that was going actually really well until one day we looked at the usage and there was no usage. And then the next day there was no usage. So on the third day, I called my my champion there and I said, hey, what's going on? I was like, you know, things are going really well. And all of a sudden there's no usage. And they're like, oh, well, you know, the guy, he actually went on vacation. He's on a cruise. So do you want to talk to him? So I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. I was like, so what are the junior technicians doing to when they get stuck? And my champion said, well, they're looking in the service manuals. And I said, oh, that's interesting. This was like a couple of months after ChatGPT had come out. Vijay and team had already integrated like some ChatGPT stuff into Airwave just for testing purposes. And I was like, I wonder if we could actually take those service manuals and get information directly from them. So I said to him, I said, okay, why don't you send me those service manuals? He's like, all of them? And I said, yeah, I was thinking it was like 50. I'm like, how hard could this be? He sent me a folder with over 5,000 manuals.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, how does anyone find anything in this? And so I called Vijay that night and I said, hey, Vijay, what do you think? Can you do this?
So So basically when Punk gave me like 5,000 manuals, actually we were trying to do like fine-tuning with some manuals and we are trying to like get answers. And I can tell you like exactly what happened actually. I fine-tuned, I guess, OpenAI, I guess it was 3.5 model with one document. It costed us like $90 actually. And Punk, hey, this seems pretty expensive actually. So if you're going to do like 5,000 documents, right? I mean, I don't know, like this might be probably a wrong route actually. Then what we did is like, then we actually learned about this RAG and then we started to put together this entire RAG infrastructure with whatever available at the time, actually. So we had like LangChain, we had like the OpenAI, and then we had another vector database to start with. And then Node.js was our platform. So we just put it together and then we just built this RAG infrastructure and then processed all the documents. And then the customer was actually pretty excited because it was our first time that, because we never thought a customer will have like 5,000 documents to start with. Then we actually understood, okay, this is going to be a huge problem actually, or every company's, because they have like ton of documents. So we need a huge infrastructure to deal with actually. So RAG was our way to go and vector database was our choice. So, and that's where our journey all started.
That was like the best, I don't know, demo or not demo, example, like just to fall into that you, they happen to have 5,000, like, you know, what if they ended up having like five, you know, it wouldn't have been a very good sample set, right? 5,000, you kind of like just jumped in feet first and just see what happens, huh? So how did you go about processing 5,000 documents?
So I think the biggest challenge processing all those documents, right? I mean, it's still been a challenge so far, mm-hmm. as you know, extracting content actually. So this field, especially like service technicians, I mean, service manual, schema diagram, it is a mess actually. To be frank, I shouldn't use the word, but it is a lot of complexity because every manual is different. They have like scanned information. They have like, you won't believe there are like some scanned documents that is inverted. So So and then there are like some manuals that are like 30, 40 years before. And then they have information on tables that is actually scanned and then in a PDF format. So it is still a challenge. But I think what we, so when we built the RAC platform, so we had, you know, a basic text scrapping from PDF, and then that was actually, we thought, okay, it's going to be okay, but that wasn't actually enough actually. So we're still actually fighting the problem because extracting information from, you know, these documents is a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And then so basically, like if I say information, right, your document has like tables, and service technicians actually are very, very specific about the information in your table, because they will ask like information about, hey, I want this part number. Can you look it up for me actually? And then we have to like make sure that part number is accurate, because if you give an incorrect information, I think that is probably not a good thing actually. So those are all the huge challenges that we actually like face every day, and we resolve it. And we have a huge team around the computer vision area itself to deal with that actually. So we have like a team, we have like a person to take care of like extracting tables. We have like a person like deal with like schematics, wiring diagrams, and then text extraction. So that has been a challenge. It's still been a challenge, but we're making good progress so far. So I think every day we made some improvement, and I think the more experience that we gained from, you know, looking at these documents. Unfortunately, we get so many documents, so it is easier for us to like train from all those documents for our RAG infrastructure. So I think things are going good there actually.
It sounds like a very difficult thing to go through, where you have text that correlates, you know, probably to a part number, and then that also probably correlates to a schematic, which is an image, right? So you've got text and you've got images. And you have to make sure that you have the right part number. You have to also make sure you pull in the right schematic for that part number.
There are some of it, like you won't even believe actually. So one example, shouldn't I take so much time, but there was one document actually, we're still fighting actually. So basically they had like probably 300 pages, and this document is a manual for like three different serial numbers for a machine. And those list of machine numbers is actually listed in like page 5 of the document actually. I mean, so if you ask a question about, hey, can you give me some information about this particular model number for this particular machine? We have to make sure that we actually use the page number 5 information across to get that information. So it is a bit of challenge, but those are all because when people created PDFs, they didn't think about AI at the time. Yeah. So now we have this concept of metadata, and then we have to like find out, okay, if there is a manual, I think our first task is first figure out, okay, what is this manual about actually? Yeah. What models that it covers actually? Is it like a generator or a air conditioner? Okay, what models does it cover actually? And then we use that information across all pages, and then we then convert those into vectors actually.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And Jesse, too, you know, like this is actually what expertise is in this field. It's like, can you look at a schematic, like discern like from that schematic, these different parts, and then be able to go into the manual, find the parts, and then actually find the installation for those particular parts. I mean, we've now looked at millions of pages of manuals. No one does this incredibly well. Like, yeah. But over years of experience, over years of doing it, you kind of remember all these things, or you've seen it before. And our ability to sort of stitch these together in a really simple, fast, boom, here you go. Here's the manual, the installation manual. Here's the table that has the part number, price, even availability. And here's the schematic of what it all looks like is like just a huge unlock, because you can now be a junior technician, ask this question, be able to understand it, and not have to bother a senior technician or, you know, have 15 years on the job to be able to do this.
That's amazing. Let's talk more about any growing pains that you had along the way, besides the crazy mess of documents, what other growing pains might you have run into during your POC?
So obviously, go ahead, Punk. Yes,
I was going to say, the when we got the 5,000 documents, it was just like sort of a mind like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? Fast forward 5 months, and I said to Vijay, I have a folder with 100 gigs. How long will this take?
I've actually asked Punk to keep hold on this document, actually this collection, because we obviously use Mongo Vector, right? So we actually we kind of scale up and down based upon the processing of vectors and storing all those vectors in those databases. So we actually want to grow one step at a time, actually. So I think the scaling of vectors is one of the challenges that we face, apart from retrieval, that is always going to be a challenge, but scaling is another challenge. But I think Mongo did a fantastic job with scaling, actually. So that wasn't actually a big pain, but we still keep a close eye on it, actually. And then obviously we actually want to be very careful about the performance as well, because when you have vectors or basically a customer with 50,000 documents, they'll probably have a vector chunk size of probably around 50 gigs. And then if you ask question on it, and it's going to be incredibly slow, actually. So those things we actually have to keep an eye on it. And it's a constant optimizations that we do. And then we try and get the numbers as small as possible, especially with respect to the performance.
Yeah, to bring it back to a user issue that we ran into in proof of concept. So, we built this proof of concept. We took it to the owner of the company who had been in the business for 60 years. I actually handed him my phone. I said, ask it anything. And he asked it five questions and it answered all those questions amazingly. So we rolled it out to all the technicians. And in the first 4 months of usage, most of the questions that were being asked were part numbers. And the initial proof of concept that we did was not great at retrieving the right part number. BJ went through and solved that. Before you did that.
Yeah. So I think that was actually one of the main reasons that we actually have to switch from the previous vector database to Mongo vector database, because when we built the POC, we actually used a different service. And it actually worked okay, actually. We didn't actually had time, think about another vector database and all those stuff, actually. But there were two issues that was going on internally. One was obviously the latency, because, our core database is Mongo document store, because we store all the chat messages in there, all our information about users, everything is in there. And then the vector data is in another place, actually. So when you ask a question, I think the going back and forth was actually tedious. We were okay. We just wanted to solve that problem. So we just, let's bite to it, actually, and then we'll deal with this later. But the other issue that was actually causing a major headache was this part number lookups, actually, because technicians were asking part numbers, questions related to, hey, can you give me details about this particular part number in this LG air compressor, stuff like that. And then So the other vector database that we're using was actually doing pure semantic search, actually. Mm-hmm. So semantic search wasn't good at, exact number matches, actually. Basically, database matches, legacy matches.
Keyword search. Keyword search, right?
Keyword search, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then that's when we decided, this is not going to work, actually. So we wanted something which does both keyword search and also semantic search. So that's when we decided, fortunately, Mongo was actually rolling out the vector support for databases. And then we decided, let's do a POC unit. And it really worked pretty well, actually. So then we actually refer it as hybrid search, because when you ask a question about a specific part number, we look up both on, keywords search, which actually matches with the exact number, and also it also does a schematic search as well. So that way we get all the information they are looking for, and then we send it to LLM, and that actually gets you the right answer that you're looking for. Because I think for us, accuracy is really, really critical, because if there is one incorrect information that goes out, people are going to lose the trust, actually. So I think having the hybrid search actually made a huge difference, in terms of accuracy, actually. So I think that was the moment that, okay, we said, okay, this is very fortunate to have Mongo to support vector database.
Nice. So I appreciate that. That's one of the big selling points or use cases is you don't have the latency. You don't have to go back and forth between two different databases. You have your operational database over here and your vector database over here. Obviously, there's going to be latency there. So having that in one spot, and then we've had full text keyword search on MongoDB for a long time now, and recently adding vector search. Now you have that hybrid search when you combine the two. And so that's one of the key differentiators that we have at MongoDB. And so so we like that it worked well for you, especially like, like you said, dealing with part numbers. Those are exact. You can't be semantic about a part number. It has to be exact.
So those are all like learnings, actually. We didn't even know like, okay, we will have issues with like semantic search, especially with part numbers. Then after digging into it, then we learned, okay, this is why it actually fails, because vector search isn't designed for like lookups, like exact number lookups, actually. So every day is something to learn here, actually.
Yeah, and it was actually amazing timing, because, you know, I was talking with our customer and they're like, well, this is awesome, but you got to get the part numbers right. Otherwise, this is not of value to us. And I was like, wait 2 weeks. We got a solution coming for you.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing with, when ChatGPT first came out, is like, well, how accurate is it? It hallucinates quite a bit, right? Yeah. But look how far we've come. Like, it's getting better and better and better. And that's one of the main things. Like, everyone, you have to prove it that it's going to be accurate, right? And it's always a work in progress. Things can all, you can always improve accuracy. There's a lot of different ways to improve accuracy as well. So, and it's generally use case specific. So you have to figure out, for your use case, it's part numbers. But every use case is a little different, and you can improve accuracy in different ways. I have a question now about how you go about. So you have retrieval augmented generation, and also keyword search. So you're using hybrid search. Are you using any sort of like, how when you actually push to talk and you're asking your question, is that going directly to the RAG system, or do you have some sort of an agentic workflow of sorts in place where it figures out for this question I only need to go to keyword, or for this question I only need semantic, or for this question I might need a different tool, or is it just one route basically for all of it?
So I think our stack is a bit more complicated than just going to the RAG, actually. So basically, when you ask a question, right? So what happens is, usually when technicians ask questions, so most of the times it is not actually clean. So what we do is like, we have like a massaging system where it actually like cleans up the question and then creates, multiple formats of the question that actually matches with what we have in our RAG infrastructure, actually. So that is the first step that we do, actually. Because in that place, sometimes, today also, like, we had a challenge where, a technician asked a question with an abbreviation in it, actually. So he uses like abbreviated terms that probably you might not see in the document, actually. Mm-hmm. So we have to like expand it. So those kind of things has to be done first place. Then what happens is, obviously, like, we convert into vectors, actually, because this is what the vector matches. But for your question, right, does you send the question to both keyword search and vector search at the same time? Yes, we do, actually. So we just fetch as much information as possible, actually. So we don't want to like make a mistake where we actually make a wrong choice and then we actually go to an incorrect place. Because when you have a question that is good for semantic, and if you send it to a keyword search, it will not pull up any information, actually. So we should be a bit careful about it, actually. So we get all the vectors that we need, actually. We get like all the matching vectors. And OpenAI does a pretty good job, actually. OpenAI is our actually summarization system. And they do a pretty good job with like, okay, this is what the user asked, and this is all the vectors, matching vectors that we have in the database. This is the RAG infrastructure, right? And OpenAI actually use this information and just gets you the answer that the user is looking for, actually. So the more vectors that we select and use it, probably it's better, actually. So we never had issues so far, especially with more information sent to OpenAI. Yeah. But the less will be a bit risky, because you might actually miss information.
The user problem we had to solve there was when we rolled this out to technicians, we couldn't really encourage them to become, you know, prompt engineers. Like, oh, you gotta ask this way. You gotta make sure you include this or that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were looking at like all the questions asked in a particular workspace, and it was typically like two words: Schindler 3100 fault code. You know, it was like the bare minimum of what they needed. So, I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to like, okay, well, can we take what they've given us and figure out the question that they're trying to ask in this very specific context? Because, I mean, it can only be certain things. We've gotten really good at it, actually. So you can literally say two words, and we could pretty much predict what question they're trying to get to.
Nice.
And we can actually suggest like the next couple of questions that they're probably going to ask as well.
Nice. So I was going to ask, I don't know if this is too much information. Tell me if it is, but like, what models are you using on the back end?
So we use all OpenAI 4.0. So we use the standard because it just works pretty well. And it's pretty fast actually recently. So that is the only thing that we actually use. We don't ever use anything else.
Nice.
I mean, it's the price to performance is pretty good. But we remain very open to all the advancements. I mean, it's like every month something new comes out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're also very flexible for our customers. We started with a bunch of customers that didn't really know OpenAI or care on the back end. But as we've gotten to larger, more enterprise companies, they have very specific, well, we want this and we want that. And so we're always open to what the customers are looking for.
Nice. This is maybe a very technical question, but what happens when someone asks a similar question? Do you have any sort of caching involved?
We don't do caching because it just it's probably better to just to get information from RAG instead of getting from cache, because it's a headache. Probably when you probably have like millions of questions asked every day, that probably makes difference in terms of both performance and price point. But apart from that, because the thing with the questions, because we actually analyze the questions pattern that the users ask, right? So caching doesn't really make any difference because every question is different, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, we solved it in a slightly different way, which was also somewhat unintended. So let's say a technician asks a question about, you know, the 7S5 switch, and they get a good answer. Well, they can actually share that answer with the tech, like in a channel within Airwave. So now everyone has access to that. And so like the caching isn't actually cached on the back end. It's actually technicians sharing the different questions and answers that they've gotten, you know, in sort of this collaborative way, like, hey, did you do this? Like, what else did you see when you did this? And so that's what's sort of kept us from having to like build a whole caching system.
Yeah. Do you have some sort of a feedback system within the app? So let's say it does, you know, come up with something that's totally wrong. Is there some sort of feedback system to help you improve?
So go ahead, Vijay.
Yeah. So I think we definitely have like something called as reactions. So we are still a chat app, right? So users can able to like react to the messages that they get. So when our system, RAG system, respond with the information that they don't like, they will dislike it, and that is one of the core metric that we use for analyzing what is going on with the RAG system. Because every day, like, we actually like go through all those dislikes and find out why. I mean, this question was incorrect. Sometimes it has like incorrect information about a machine that they are looking for, or sometimes like it doesn't provide. I mean, one example was like, you know, they used an abbreviated term that was not in the document actually. So yeah, we use that to, you know, enhance our platform actually. So yeah, that was one of the core benefit of having that feedback system in our place.
And what we've seen in the actual field is that the documentation is a starting point. Because, you know, when a machine has been operating for 20 years, 24 hours a day, the factory spec that it came with is usually no longer the norm. You know, like, people put in OEM parts, technicians go in there and hack things to make them continue to work. Like, after 20 years, like, there's no instruction manual.
Yeah.
And so what Airwave also does, because it is inherently communication platform is it captures that institutional knowledge. So if some technician goes out there and is like, look, the manual says connect the 7S5 to the 7X9, but make sure you don't jump the orange cable or you let the capacitor drain before you actually connect it. That institutional knowledge also gets captured in Airwave. And now the technician is not just relying on what's being said in the manual or the schematic. They can actually get all of the information for everyone that's ever worked on it and commented on it within Airwave and get the right answer for the right solution.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Are there any other what are the next phases of Airwave? Like what are you working on? What cool things are you working on? Also, like, how big is your engineering team? I'm curious.
I can share some of the things that we're working on. We are very customer and user driven. So I try to get out in a service truck once a month to go help folks fix the things that they're fixing. Our gauge for product success is, while I'm out with a senior technician, can I use Airwave as someone that knows nothing about any of these machines and basically be able to do their job? And there's always interesting problems that pop up. So I think schematics is a place that we're gonna probably go pretty deep because oftentimes, like the mechanical stuff, people can figure out, but schematics are just like, whoa, I have no idea. And there's some really interesting things that we can do there. BJ, you can take the question on the stellar team you've put together.
Yeah. So our team is, our engineering team is built with like 15 people and everyone is working remote. They're distributed across the world.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we use Airwave exclusively for communication. No email, no Slack, no Teams. All of our communication is on Airwave.
Oh, wow. Airwave. Nice.
Yeah, and actually it's been really great because we don't have a lot of meetings because we just use asynchronous audio. And it gives it a really personal feel. So instead of like reading someone's text summary of something or explanation of something, you can actually hit play and listen to them. And the intonation, just talking about it, makes a big difference. And I've actually really enjoyed that.
Yes, this is like asynchronous communication, right? So you don't have like the pain to respond immediately. You can just listen to it and then analyze it, and then you can answer it the time is right for you.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I wish. A lot of times it's like too many meetings. that sounds good. Do you have any open positions on your engineering team?
So we're always looking for talent. You know, I think Vijay and I were actually chatting about this earlier this morning, and so much of what is happening in this space is so cutting edge that it's hard to find experts, really. Mm-hmm. It's all about finding people that are really interested in these sort of technologies. And our hypothesis for the company is that AI applied to very specific functions is required in order for it to really be an expert. You know, I know there's really brilliant people working on general intelligence, but you know, being able to read a schematic and know like the output of what is being said, whether it's right or wrong, like these are things that I really, you see, like maybe not leaps in terms of development, but like minor things you fix compound and it gets much better. And so, yeah, we're always looking for talented people, particularly in the intersection between, do you know a lot about mechanics? Do you know a lot about electric? And can you also code? Like those people are, get in touch with us if that's your interest space, because we have some really interesting problems to solve.
All right, LinkedIn.
I think to simplify that, actually, so we're looking for people who worked in computer vision side with experience in Python. And then if they have exposure to sentence transformer models or any LLMs, especially with information retrieval, right? So example, like table extraction, like, you know, object detections. Mm-hmm. So those kind of stuff using with CV or without CV, I think we are always looking for those kind of expertise.
Gotcha. And then someone with an electronic engineering background where they can read schematics and...
Oh, yeah.
That is quite specific. But LinkedIn, if you're listening, if you have these requirements, you know, reach out to Airwave. You know, you never know. Amazing. What did we miss anything? Is there anything that we haven't talked about regarding the application or anything in general that you'd like to bring up?
I would say one other thing that we didn't talk about that is a major unlock. It goes to a customer story as well, but is only possible in the last 6 months because of these technology advancements is we have a customer who opened up shop in a foreign country, and they were trying to train their technicians who spoke, you know, the native tongue in that country. And they couldn't get them ramped quickly enough because the English to, you know, Farsi was, there was just such a miss. And by Airwave inherently, you know, because it's built on these LLMs, can understand or transcribe in any of these languages. And what it can actually do is when you ask a question in like Farsi, it will transcribe it in Farsi. It will go find the answer in an English manual and then transcribe it back in Farsi. And like this was just such a major unlock for this company, because all of a sudden these folks that are pretty junior, don't understand this technology, very complex, can ask these really dumb questions that they were afraid of asking the really senior technicians who were only spoke English and admittedly were pretty frustrated with the fact that these folks were asking dumb questions. And, you know, I was chatting with the operations guy who operates this team, and he basically said, the people that are most successful in these jobs are the ones that ask the dumb questions, because it's not expected to know these things. And if you don't know, you got to ask. And if you're afraid to ask, you're never going to figure it out. And the fact that they can now come in and ask a bunch of dumb questions to an Airwave and not sort of get judged or like, you know, have that be berated by some senior technician has been a major unlock for them. So the international element of this, we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, it's one thing.
So the one thing that we are fortunate enough is like, you know, this translation works pretty well because their questions are usually like very specific about a machine or a part number. So if you're actually translating like a story, it would be incorrect. But for us, it just like works pretty well because we just, all we need to do is just translate like few words and then with the machine name in it and a part number with it. So it actually works really well for us actually.
Yeah, close enough that they understand, they get the point. I mean, because I was thinking it's one thing where you might have many, many, you know, manuals that you have to search through and find this information. But imagine trying to do that and the manuals are written in a language that you don't understand. Like, that's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the biggest thing that folks tell us is that when a technician doesn't know how to do something because they haven't seen it before, or someone doesn't answer the phone and tells them what to do it, or if they YouTube it or try to find it on Reddit, if they can't find an answer, they do what is the most expensive thing possible for the company. They start trying things. And that's usually when, you know, like you do something that could break the machine or cost you thousands of dollars in a part. And so just limiting that, like don't try it unless you actually ask Jarvis, has been pretty transformational for our customers.
Nice. Amazing. Any other last words? I think we covered most of the topics, but I wanted to say like thank you for the demo, because the demos generally like that talking about something is one thing, but like seeing it in action and then seeing again back to the video of the customer that was using it, just seeing his reaction to it actually answering his question is amazing. That's got to feel really good, like creating this product and someone using it and you know it's working well for them.
I just want to say all the credit goes to Vijay and his team. You know, like I get to go out and find really hard problems and then I'll just message Vijay on Airwave and be like, hey, can you do it? And those guys figure it out. So thank you.
Nice. Amazing work. Amazing work on the application, and looking forward to what you do from here on out as well. Thank you both for joining. Any last words before we go?
Nope.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Jesse, for organizing this chat. It was pretty good.
Yeah, and thanks to all of our viewers for tuning in.
Yes, yes. Again, if you weren't able to, or if you joined later, weren't able to watch the entire stream, it will be available video on demand on both LinkedIn and YouTube. And then in the coming week or so, it will be on the podcast networks as well. So thank you again, audience. We'll see you on Thursday for some live coding and next Tuesday for another guest. So we'll see you then. Thank you all. Bye.